You're getting lunch, but the reason these guys are lined up is because they're about to do something which I'm going to get out of the way of.
Now, I'm just going to say that Sam is setting this up. This will last exactly 15 minutes, or 900 seconds. This is a series of rapid talks, and we are going to present what is happening in our group. And this is an extended group across a number of virtual organizations and collaborations. So I came here 10 years ago wanting to build an artificially intelligent chemical system. We've got most of the way there. We've got the people together. We've got the semantic components. And what we're really lacking is the knowledge. So what you're going to see in much of the rest of today is the problem that we simply cannot get the knowledge which intelligence is built on. So again, 10 years ago, we came up with the idea of the worldwide molecular matrix, a peer-to-peer system where people published information into a communal open area. We didn't know the word open then. We didn't know about Wikipedia. We didn't know about all sorts of other things, OpenStreetMap and so on, that did this. But we are now in a position to semantify, validate, and Joe will tell you about it.
Hi. The blue on this diagram represents CML, and most of my thunder has been stolen by Henry and Alex, because I'm going to talk about CML and Chem for Word. And the idea of the dark side has been coming out a lot recently, and I looked at this and I thought, what is CML? And for me, it is the force for molecular informatics or chemical informatics. It surrounds each and every one of those components, it penetrates them, and it does bind them together. And it acts as the glue so that you can actually talk to each other. And we need to talk about CML because, as Henry has said, and Alex has said, it shouldn't be seen. The idea is that it's meant to be there in the background, it's meant to make your life easier by allowing machines to talk to each other, to allow them to do the work for you. So we need to talk about CML, you shouldn't ever have to see it, unless you're a hacker. And there is a word of warning on CML. Prolonged exposure does seem to cause beards. I don't know what happens. So we have been working for the last couple of years with Microsoft, with Alex's group, developing the chemistry add-in for Word, Chem for Word. This makes it possible to import chemistry into a Word environment and to deal with the chemicals semantically. So all of the editing is driven by intelligent processes in the background. It makes it easy to do things which are chemically sensible. And correctly, you shouldn't be able to see the CML. It's all hidden in the background. And it's done thanks to the new Office document format. So we have the CML in the background. We have different representations of it on screen. And a single change to the CML is then updated and permeates through the entire document, which hopefully will mean that manual renumbering of things like bold numbers throughout the document is a thing of the past.
Vast amounts of chemical data get produced every day, here in this department and other institutes around the world. But the vast majority of this data never gets published. Dan's talked about some of the reasons. Scientists often don't see the value of their own data, or it's just the effort required. It can be hard work. The data's scattered and fragmented, which means it's undiscoverable and sort of unreadable by machines, so it can't be searched for. There's even the data that is published, trapped in PDFs, trapped in theses on bookshelves, it's there, but scientists can't use it. And we're working on a couple of projects to address this. The first one, called Clarion, is aiming to make publishing data much simpler. So the idea is we capture the raw data as it's produced in the department and offer chemists the option to decide what to do with their data. It should be as simple as checking your email. Check your data. Do I want to delete this data, embargo it, publish it now? It really should be that simple. Second project that's been worked on in the group, looking at trying to release more data, get it out there, is Crystalli, which we'll be hearing a bit more about later. Crystalli goes out and searches the world's literature, looking for crystal structures, published as freely available supplementary information, and indexes them. On publishers' websites, the crystal structures are buried away, not visible as chemistry. Crystalli finds them, transforms them into CML representations and provides one website where you can search the world published crystallography. And to support these projects and others, we're developing a repository called ChemPound, because it's a common problem. How do I put data on chemical data on the web in a good searchable form? So ChemPound takes legacy data, like crystallography, converts it into CML and RDF representations, which allow us to do... This is all hidden from the end user, the chemist, but allow us to create much more powerful searches.
Okay, hello. OSCAR is a tool that we've been developing in the Unilever Centre since about 2002 for the recognition of named entities in chemical texts. You can see on the slide behind me is a screenshot. It's recognising chemical names as well as names of reactions, names of enzymes, and sections of experimental data in the text. So current approaches to information extraction require massive manual effort, and we believe that with our tools, we can offer better alternatives. So Chemical Tagger is the combination of OSCAR with natural language processing technology. You can see on the slide behind me is the parse tree for a short chemical statement, such as you might get in an experimental write-up. And using this technology, we can start to understand the text that people are publishing, and we can begin to extract semantic data from it. Thank you.
OPSIN, or the Open Parts of the Systematic IUPAC Nomenclature, is a Java application and library for the conversion of IUPAC names to structures. For example, that name there can be converted to a connection table by OPSIN and then via other open source toolkits to a depiction such as the one there. The program is fast, precise, supports the majority of organic nomenclature, hence allowing the conversion of up to 95% of names in some set data sets. The program is available with a web service. There's an example of it there, allowing the either for sort of demonstration purposes or batch conversion of names to smiles, CML, depictions, or inches. We've also recently made an Android application, which will be demonstrated later this afternoon, allowing alternative inputs such as speech recognition or conversion of text to names.
Hello, so I'm unfortunately not part of Peter's group. I work at SGSC Darsby Laboratory, which is just based outside of Warrington in the UK. I'm a computational chemist, and I work in the area of quantum chemistry. So I contribute to a number of different codes, including the Avogadro and CCP1 GUI molecular editors that you can see there. I'm here to tell you about the Kyoji project, which is an open source, open data collaboration to change the way that computational chemists interact with their data. So most computational chemists spend their lives using large amounts of computer time to generate huge quantities of data. Most of this data produced by the codes is in a very cumbersome, archaic, free-form output. The chemists that run the code will usually only extract a very small portion of that data, and the rest is then either thrown away or is scribbled away on a hard drive somewhere, never seen the light of day again. So most of the data that's produced is actually never seen by anyone. This is a massive loss because data is the foundation of the field, and if there were databases of these calculations, you could mine them, you could use them to test the validity of codes. So what we're doing is, in the Kyoji project, we're trying to build the tools to manage this data, both on a local level, so on a user's own machine, but also to build international databases that can be accessed so people can see the data that other people have done. So by using the same tools on the local and the global level, we encourage uptake. So it's a community-based project. We're not owned by anyone. We're in the internet. We have collaborators from all over the world, and indeed one of our collaborators, Pablo, is on the Twitter feed. So the vision that we have is that you will have a number of different databases. Some will be public, some will be institutions, some will be on the local disk. Users can run their jobs, the file passed into CML, uploaded into the databases. Other users can then see that data, pull it out into programs that understand it, run their own calculations, and then can upload this data back out so that it can be seen, so that the amount of data grows.
Hi, I'm going to be talking at 100 miles an hour about the Blue Obelisk. And what this is, it's a group really, very simple, it's a group of people and projects who all have common interests in open data, open standards, and open source in chemistry. I'm a member, Peter Morris is a member, and a lot of other people here are members. The important thing to remember is there's a website. If you go there, there's a mailing list, and we organize regular meetings at ACS meetings and other conferences also. So, and the poster outside also to find out more information. Now here I'm going to be focusing on interoperability in the Blue Obelisk. And I guess the most well-known project that we have in this relation is OpenBabel, which can interconverge many different file formats. So chemists keep coming up with new file formats. Companies make new software, make a new file format. But it's useful for the community to be able to interconvert out of one software and into another one so that they can use the best tool for the job, even if that's not what the vendor wants. It's what the community really needs. So there's lots of options when you're converting files. It's not a trivial task. Now, OpenBabel is just one. It's also a cheminformatics toolkit. It's open source. It's not the only open source cheminformatics toolkit. There's also CDK, RDKit, and Indigo most recently. And if you want to use all of these in the same software, it's quite difficult, but they all have different features or different implementations of the same features. And so I've developed Symfony, another Blue Obelisk piece of software, which allows you to use them all in the same program, using the same commands and so forth. And another field that we work on is in computational chemistry, where you have a lot of proprietary codes, and when they do calculations, you get this huge log file. And they all have different log files with the same information in them, in different formats, in different ways. And for instance, CCLib can be used to extract all that information so that if you want to implement an algorithm, CompChem algorithm, that's independent of the toolkit, you can use CCLib.
Hi, I'm Rufus Pollock from the Open Knowledge Foundation. Just to say about the OCAIRF very quickly, which this slide, which is we're a not-for-profit, we were founded in 2004, and we do a whole gamut of things, from science to sonnets to genes to geodata. We have working groups on these areas and a community. I maybe want to say here is how I met Peter and why I'm here at all today, which is one of the reasons we do this whole gamut of things. We do, you know, we have a thing with Open Shakespeare, we have stuff with the Pantin principles. But the insight that I guess we felt that we had and we thought about here was that you can build lots of apps, but then fundamentally in a lot of this, I think it's a simple problem. There's a simple root problem, which is open data. You know, we can't build all the apps, we can spend a lot of time doing it, but if we can get open data out there, a lot of these things can be built. Why don't we have that amazing app that Microsoft Research just demoed with us for bibliographic data 10 years ago? You know, someone might have knocked it up in a weekend if we had had open data. So I think that, for me, is the biggest thing here. If we have open access to the resources, we can build the tools.
Hi, I'm going to speak about the open bibliography, which Rufus just touched on. There is too much research being published for anyone to keep track of without a computer. It just can't be done. We need to be able to get hold of that data and mine it. And that's not just getting the title or the author. We need to know who that author is and how it interconnects in a free manner. Otherwise, we're beholden to everyone who claims to own the data. We've been putting pressure on various publishers and various holders of bibliographic data to release what they're doing and to give it to us so that we can actually use it. So a few people have come on board. So we've got the University of Cambridge Library. We've got the British Library National Bibliography. And IUCR have donated their bibliography to Creative Commons Zero. And we've just had word that PubMed are allowing us to take the data, and it's CC0 as well. That's the aim. But unless we could mine it, unless we can get the citations and follow it, it makes research almost impossible, really.
Hi, Nick Barnes from the Climate Code Foundation. We've heard a lot today about open science and open source software. The foundation's goal is to use more open software to increase public understanding of climate science, motivated by the importance of the public policy decisions that we have to make. We have Peter and also Cameron on our advisory committee. We actually formed the foundation in August last year based on work that I've been doing in my spare time since 2008. And we're in the process now of looking for funding from corporate funding or from institutions or from NGOs to allow us to do more work on a full-time basis going forwards. We have very ambitious plans to influence the entire field of climate science, to open it up to improve public understanding. I have a whole bunch more to say, but I had an article in Nature last autumn. Some people might have seen that. There's an article forthcoming in Nature Climate Change, the new journal.
Isn't this a great way of keeping things to time? Before the AMI project came along, I'd not heard of the word amanuensis. It means a sort of intelligent helper or scribe. The goal for this project was to try and find ways to help the chemists working in the lab. So the lab is a not a very kind environment for using a computer. Space is limited, it can be messy. Very often, this is wearing gloves and protective clothing. They often have their hands full, and so using a computer can be quite a challenge. We had a brainstorm with various chemists in the department, and the that emerged was the need for ways to collect ancillary data, backup data, that could be referred to later on when they've finished their experiment and it didn't do quite what they expected it to do. So here you can see some of the parts of AIMEE. Basically, we used various off-the-shelf techniques to come up with a quick solution to helping their things. Another dominant theme that came out of our brainstorm was food. And I think, do we just hand over to Peter again?
I just say that all of these things have posters outside. There are demos, and particularly during the reception later, you'll be able to talk to these people and actually see things happening.
Apparently, I'm going to stand between you and lunch. I don't think at this stage I want to sum up anything too much, but I think the themes that are coming through and the conversations coming out of this morning is more or less self-evident, the themes of open data, open standards, and perhaps we'll move on to open process in the afternoon. But I think the important thing is the conversation, and please do have that conversation over lunch, and we'll see you back here at 2 o'clock.